Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program, via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 5th, 2021. A strike by South Sudan national oil workers paralyzed operations at 10 oil fields across the country.
The national staff of oil companies have been going on a strike, especially in Dar Petroleum. The reason for a strike is that they are demanding implementation of Unified Human Resource Policy Manual, a document that we prepared in 2020.
And the retired Catholic Archbishop Paulino Lukudu Loro died in Nairobi. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The retired Catholic Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Juba died in Nairobi Monday after a short illness. Retired Archbishop Paulino Lukudu Loro served for 30 years as the Archbishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba. Archbishop Lukudu was an outspoken critic of the government of South Sudan. The Catholic Archbishop Stephen Ameyu has declared 4 days of mourning for Lukudu. Still on religious matters, Pope Francis has used his traditional Easter message to denounce the wars that raged around the globe, even amid global pandemic. AFP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The Pope delivered his Urbi et Orbi address inside St. Peter's Basilica so as not to attract crowds to St. Peter's Square. Noting the coronavirus continues to spread and with it social and economic crisis, he called it scandalous that wars have not ended and military arsenals continue to be strengthened. He also appealed anew to the international community to overcome delays in distributing COVID-19 vaccines and to ensure supplies reach the poorest countries. I'm Ben Thomas.
Around 3,000 South Sudanese oil workers with Sud and Jipok oil companies operating in South Sudan have kicked off a week-long strike, which has paralyzed production at 10 oil facilities across the country. The workers are demanding a safer working environment, health insurance, housing loans, and shift benefits, among other things. The strike is expected to reduce oil production in various oil fields across South Sudan to 100,000 barrels per day. South Sudan typically produces between 120,000 to 130,000 barrels of crude oil per day. Port Kang is the South Sudan's Minister of Petroleum. He says the national oil workers have the rights to demand for their benefits.
The national staff of oil companies have been going on a strike, especially in Dar Petroleum. The reason for a strike is that they are demanding implementation of Unified Human Resource Policy Manual, a document that we prepared in 2020, and we launched it in December 2020. And this document came as a result of us trying to bring to an end the grievances that have been in the sector for so long. We felt that it was the right time for us to settle that so that we can also build the capacity of the national staff. We have been discussing it with partners. Recently, I have told them that the document must be implemented the way it is because we did not see anything wrong with the document. It does not take anything away from partners and as well as from national staff. Instead, the document equalizes everybody by saying you get your fair share. You get what belongs to you. You don't take what belongs to others. And that is simply the essence of that document.
When I spoke to some members of the national staff at the oil fields, they told me that your directives to the oil companies have been ignored by one consortium, from especially the Malaysian consortium. They have ignored your directives.
I don't want to conclude that because I don't see why they should ignore. The national staff have been demanding their rights. It's not a privilege. They have been demanding what belongs to them. And they are not ready as well to take what belongs to partners. And what I'm simply doing is to say, you get your fair share, you get what belongs to you. For example, if you take like shipped allowance, The dividend is million times between foreign partners and national employees. We try to close the gap. And this is something, is a principle that we stand by, and we think we will it will be achieved. So I don't want to conclude. I have seen what was written by someone. I'm away. I'm not in Juba. So I don't want to conclude until when I'm back.
Let's focus on one of the grievances that you've just mentioned, the shift allowances. And you said there's a huge difference. How much does a national South Sudanese staff get compared to an international staff from China or Malaysia?
A national staff compared to international. Nationally staff a day get $2.8, you know, it's $86 a month. So you're basically talking of $2.8 a day. Meanwhile, their counterparts from the international partners get up to what they call back-to-back, up to $50. So you see the gap, you know. $2 or $3 versus $50 is a very serious gap that must be closed, because they are basically doing the same job. You got an engineer, for example, who is a Chinese, and an engineer who is a South Sudanese, who are doing the same work. But the pay is completely, you know, the gap is too huge. And we felt we should close the gap.
Apart from shift benefits, what are some of the other grievances that the national staff are raising in the oil fields?
Well, I may not give you all because the document is too big, but I will be able to tell you that we try to address loan because the system that is there does not really encourage the oil staff to establish themselves, particularly the national staff. But it encourage the foreign workers, you know, to establish themselves. So we address the issues of loan. We also address the issues of internship of our students, because in some JOCs, they work on monthly basis. They give them what they feel like. There is nothing standard about, that they set. And they have no access to medical facilities, you know, in the oil field. For example, if you take Paloch, you are there working as a student who is doing internship, but you cannot even access medical facility. So these are some of the things that we have addressed in the document. It's a comprehensive document that addressed the whole human resource issues. And we did not do it alone. We did it together with the Ministry of Labor. We invited them to guide us through the labor law, to help us identify the gaps. And we also invited the companies, the JOCs, human resource department, were present. They were part of the committee that I formed, and they participated. It was done with their consent.
I know that South Sudan produces around 120,000 barrels to 130 per day. With this ongoing strike, what is its impact on oil production in South Sudan?
Well, so far it's a peaceful strike, and it did not affect anything. But I'm still encouraging them that let them not take the law into their own hand. It's us who came up with it. We will continue to push for it because we believe in it. We believe that these discrepancies must come to an end. We must resolve them.
Honorable Minister, most journalists who have tried to visit the oil fields did not get the permission to do so. So we don't know what is happening in the oil fields. What other issues are there? We know that the environmental situation in the oil fields is not good news because a lot of host communities have been complaining. What is your ministry doing to address this?
We are at the second stage of the environmental audit for us to come up with the companies that are going to do the environmental audit. And if you remember, I did a launching officially. I did the first stage and I did the second stage. And when we selected the companies, we will also announce it to the world. We will inform the world, and the audit will be done. And it is out of the audit report that we will be able to make logical conclusions. It is our responsibility to see into it that audit is done. Okay? It's about the life of our people, and we don't have better choice than to do that. I will also go a little bit further to inform you that we are doing cost recovery audit. 2011-2012 audit is done. We also commissioned 2013 up to 2018. And when the audit is finished, already it is being done. Companies like Ernst & Young are doing the audit, MIT and another company. They are international companies. Once they finish, we will make the finding open. This is in terms of audit. Another thing that we have done, John, we have also launched a document called Local Content. This local content is to protect the local business people that are doing business in the area of oil. If you go over the record for over the years, you will find that foreign companies have been entirely running the sector. They have been owning a lot of contracts. But with the local content, we are trying to see into it that local people are protected. And if they pass technically, then we will be there to support them.
Cost recovery could sound strange to a layman or a woman. Could you break it down for the common people to understand what this is all about?
We are auditing because companies, they have their budgets every year. The auditors are looking into how they implement those budgets, where the budget implemented is spent on items that are budgeted for or on different items. If they are on different items, are they allowed by the law, by EFSA, or not? And if they are found not to be recoverable, then we shall ask them to reimburse back that money to the government, because that's what the EFSA say.
Talking about money here, how much is South Sudan getting from its oil production per day, or say per month?
Well, it depends on monthly basis. So far, we only get two cargoes every month. That is an open secret. One goes for roads, the Nalbilen, for companies that are constructing roads. And the other one is what we sell, and it depends on the market. This month, maybe 20-something million. For example, in when the oil prices crashed, you know, there was a time you were talking of less than 20 million, you know. So it depends on a monthly basis and how the market is.
Are we talking about $20 million per day?
No, that is per cargo. You are talking of money. Our entitlement, for example, we only have two cargoes. One goes for roads, the other one the government take it. So the other one that the government take, it depends on the prices in the market.
You are talking about a cargo that goes for roads. Could you explain that?
What does that mean is the commitment that money that comes from that cargoes, it goes to companies that are building roads. The money, the cargo is sold, the money goes to finance. Finance pay the companies that are building roads.
Could you tell our listeners the details of these road constructions? For instance, road construction where, from where to where?
I'm not the Minister of Road. I think the Minister of Road will be in a better position to talk to you. But what I know is that the cargoes that goes for road, we sell it, the money goes to finance, and the finance pay whoever it is allocated to that month.
And talk to me a little bit about the second cargo. You said one goes for road construction. What about the second cargo? What is it used for?
The other one is a government cargo that the government decide what to do with it, especially Minister of Finance. We have liabilities. They may decide to pay liability. They may decide to pay salaries. That is a decision of the Ministry of Finance.
You are right now in Khartoum to negotiate with the Sudanese oil officials about aspects of the, you know, cooperation agreement between the two countries when it comes to oil issues. How much is South Sudan paying to Sudan for using Sudan's oil pipelines?
Well, the same money that is in the cooperation agreement is what we pay. Nothing has changed. It's only the figure that is dropping.
How much are you supposed to pay as per the cooperation agreement?
We did the calculation in 2020, but we are now looking forward. I came to Sudan and I discussed with the Minister of Petroleum of Sudan. We will convene a meeting of technical people to do the reconciliation, and there we will know the figure. But it's below a billion. From the $3 billion, it's below $1 billion.
That's Port Kang, South Sudan's Minister for Petroleum. He was speaking with me earlier today from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese returning to their homes in eastern Equatorial State demand compensation. Find out why after the break.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Some South Sudanese who returned home from refugee camps in Pagiri of Eastern Equatoria State's Magui County are asking the government to compensate them for their property, which was destroyed during the 2016 conflict. The refugees say their houses were vandalized by government soldiers. A government spokesperson says the returnees should not expect compensation, but only humanitarian assistance from aid agencies. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Gulu in northern Uganda.
35-year-old Grace Silva Modo, a widow and mother of three, says she returned from Uganda to her village in Kairipipayam a week ago. Modo tearfully describes what she saw upon arriving in the four different trading centers and villages along the Juba Nimule Highway.
When you reach Lower Arapi, Pagere, Kerepi, you go up to Moli, this is the dangerous area that we have really missed a lot of our houses. When you look at those structures, you'll feel like as if you are really not in the world. Because if every some 4 to 5 years you leave your motherland, you go to another country, you come back, you make a grass touch, you go back again for exile, you came back from there, you want a mabati seat, you put your structure, everything is destroyed.
Modo says the experience of the conflict haunts her because many of her relatives who were killed in the conflict were not given a decent burial. Modo says 139 family heads have returned to Kairipi to clean up the area. She says she is trying to repair her dilapidated house before relocating her children from Uganda. 60-year-old Elia Sumbali, who hails from Pagiri, says he fled to the Pagirinya refugee settlement camp in Uganda's Ajumani district when conflict broke out in 2016. Sumbali and dozens of other refugees returned to their villages along the Juba Nimule road last week to participate in a cleaning exercise aimed at encouraging refugees to safely and voluntarily return home. Sumbali says he stayed in the Haider Salam Trading Center.
We are here now for 4 days. We sleep in a certain building where the doors and the windows were removed, but the roof was not removed. Mine was destroyed completely. The door, the roof, even the tile were all removed. So I cannot sleep in it. I've come now. I'm now back to repair my house.
Sumbali, Modo, and other returnees with similar stories say the destruction of their administrative centers, shops, school and health facilities and residential houses along the Juba Nimule Highway left them without any stable source of livelihood. Sumbali says he expected government soldiers who stayed in the area during the conflict to protect his property, not ruin it.
My house was destroyed by the soldier of South Sudan. That one I cannot deny. If the government can compensate my house, it's okay.
South Sudan government spokesperson Michael McQuay says refugees like Sumbali returned voluntarily and should not expect to be compensated.
They should be resettled, not to ask for compensation. Otherwise, who will compensate those who lost their lives during the liberation struggle? If they are talking of houses destroyed, who destroyed them? But they were destroyed by war. Anybody who comes back voluntarily is supposed to report to the UNHCR and the SRR. It's not a matter of saying, I've come back, so I must be known.
The South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, OSSRRC, says 364,000 South Sudanese refugees have returned to the country since the country's former warring parties signed the Revitalized Peace Agreement. More than 2.2 million other South Sudanese still reside in refugee camps across the region, according to the UN Refugee Agency and the SSRRC. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
And now for some happy story. Last month, South Sudan in Focus aired a story about a South Sudanese single mother of two who started an online fundraising campaign to boost her laundry business in Juba. Sarah Naumba started a GoFundMe campaign to raise enough money to buy a washing machine and a dryer to ease her work. Naumba says with the help of VOA and other local stations in South Sudan, she has met her financial goal of raising $650. For VOA News, David Monodanga has that story.
Naumba's GoFundMe campaign raised $430. She says she received visitors who donated $350 and 15,000 South Sudanese pounds, equivalent to $25. Naumba's story attracted both local and foreign donors in Juba and overseas. Giza Moses, one of the activists with the Youth Solidarity Group, says as soon as they heard Naumba's story on South Sudan in Focus, his group immediately formed a committee to collect money. Moses, who works in Eastern Equatorial State's Kapoita County, says several factors triggered his group's interest in helping Naumba.
It was starting a very viable initiative which was worthy of our support. So we immediately launched internal fundraising, not using the GoFundMe link, but we were fundraising manually. And then we were able to raise a kind of $350 plus 15,000 SSP. And then we took it to her place. So basically what motivates me is, one, she's a single mother, and two, she is a youth who is trying to do something for herself to become economically independent. And that is the only thing which can pull the youth out of poverty and unemployment.
Naumba says the contributions from the Youth Solidarity Group helped her buy a washing machine and a dryer.
They came to deliver the contribution that was given by different people from Maridi, Yambio, Malakalwao, and those in Juba. And I was so overwhelmed by their love and their support. And I think it's all because of the story which went on air on VOA. And I'm touched by their love that they had, and they came out to support me.
The 28-year-old mother of two says the media helped her reach the goal. Naumba praised the media for standing with her during her struggle.
When I first opened the campaign, it took like about 3 to 4 days for anyone to donate. So I lost hope. But afterwards, when people started to donate, I was really touched. And I'm so excited. I'm thankful to everyone who have donated.
Moses, who also directs a local organization known as Humanity and Community Empowerment Organization, says the group has a program for creating employment through entrepreneurship. He says his group helped 200 young men and women across the country to become economically independent. Moses is asking young South Sudanese men and women to emulate Naumba and venture into their own businesses.
The wealth of this nation is hidden in entrepreneurship. That's why, despite the fact that we have war, dozens of youths from our neighboring countries have flooded the cities, the towns of this country, and running small business initiatives. They are their own bosses, and they earn more money than what they will get in the employment sector. So Sarah is one of the youths who was working in one of the best hotels, as it's seen, but still what she was getting wasn't enough. And now, by doing her own laundry business that she owns, and she's her own boss, I think she's a happy lady today.
Moses says he believes Naumba will create jobs for other South Sudanese who are struggling to put food on the table for their loved ones. Naumba says she plans to purchase her washing machine and dryer as soon as possible so that she can provide same-day service to her clients. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga, reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, a taxi driver who was assaulted by bodyguards of Vice President James Wanyika over the weekend is accusing traffic police officers stationed at Gumba suburb of ordering security agents to attack him after retaining his documents during a traffic stop. The director of traffic police at Gumbo denies that police ordered any security personnel to attack someone. A press secretary in the office of the vice president says Iga's bodyguards stopped the driver because he had blocked a presidential convoy. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Ding Deng is a public commuter driver who operates a taxi service between Konyokonyo Market and Gumbo Suburb in Juba. Deng says while on his way to drop off his customers in Gumbo over the weekend, traffic officers stopped him by the roadside and demanded to see his logbook and driving license.
Then they asked me, why are you driving a vehicle that has a left door? The passenger door is at the main road. Then I tell them that thing, there's nothing we can do in South Sudan because the vehicle just came like that and I go. So they asked me to pay them some cash. So seeing I was having customers in the vehicle, they were fed up. So I told them, you remain with my document. If the issue of the door at the main road, I will just come and discuss.
Deng says while he was talking to the officer, a vice presidential convoy was passing and all vehicles were asked to give way. He says a car full of military men stopped and the soldiers jumped out and assaulted him.
Well, the convoy were ahead of me. It was only one vehicle that remained by him. So when I was taking my passenger to the station, it was the traffic who told the convoy that that guy has an issue with us. There was a vehicle that hit on me and there was some other vehicle behind me. Suddenly the police vehicle and knocked my vehicle on the side. Then I stopped with the vehicle. They pulled me out of the vehicle. They hit me with a gun. Then they took my Apple key with the telephone.
Deng says he cannot confirm whether the soldiers who beat him were from the vice presidential's convoy because he was unconscious after the beating. The director of Gumbo Traffic Police Post, First Lieutenant Saki Roman Samako, says he was on duty over the weekend and heard about a taxi driver who was beaten by security officials, but denies sending any security personnel to attack Deng.
No, it is not true. We, traffic police, our work on the road is only to direct the vehicle and for the safety of people and the movement of the vehicle. We don't have anything of directing a security to go and beat a driver. And if a driver have a traffic violation, we can bring him in the office. One, we make for him awareness or we give for him fine.
Wani Alajabu is the press secretary in the office of Vice President Waniga. He says Deng's car blocked the vice president's convoy and that prompted the bodyguards to act immediately.
They tried to stop him because he blocked the passage until the whole convoy is stopped just very close to the park. And then in the process of asking him in order to know the motive, so he tried to escape or running away. So in the process of running, he fell down and then he knocked himself at the borders which was being parked at the side of the road. And he was injured.
Alajabu says he suspects the driver was trying to dodge the traffic police and ended up entering in the convoy. He says no security officer assaulted Deng.
Not that he's been beaten, but of course, always as people are saying, because he has been chased by the security guard, so people felt that he's been beaten, but he's not been really beaten because the defense cannot allow even any intimidation to his people, despite they are even wrong. Interfering in the road.
Alajabu says he read posts on social media and heard rumors that the young men and women at Gumbo Suburb are organizing to attack the convoy of the vice president upon his return from Magwi County. He condemns any plans to attack the vice president's entourage and appeals to drivers to admit when they are at fault and give way to convoys of dignitaries in the country. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. Let's know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We now leave you with the song Blessed by Eddie Kenzo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Story, yeah. So why do we turn down some story? I know I am. Yona bien cora, es un alam. On mo, chile y pe, o kuntu aranga, voy a gala. Bami, be blessed, I feel blessed.